This is Leo Babeu, and you are in tune to KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio, where we, for the longest time, have been bringing you at least a couple of times a month the Wandering Nature News, courtesy of our park naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park, Michaela Rice. Michaela, we're facing new realities in your assignment, and we're going to try out going once a month with the Wandering Nature News. We hope to pin it down to a specific Wednesday of the month so everybody's aware that it's upcoming. But thanks for working with us to continue to be able to provide what I think is useful, interesting information about our wildlands and the animals and plants in them.
Yes, I'm very excited to be here today and to continue these conversations with you and spread some knowledge about our Northwoods.
And curiosity and questions too, right? Half of the time we're wondering exactly
more
what the story
is.
It's both wondering and wandering, right? Mm-hmm. The nature news that we provide. I know you're kind of excited today because it seems that some certain animal activity along the North Shore has been capturing your attention of late as we're entering this period where snow is falling in some places, not quite sticking around in other places, but we've got that first cold wave of the year that truly speaks to it being more winter than anything else along the North Shore. So what have you been paying attention to? What are these animals that have caught your eye?
Yeah, it's interesting. Without the snow cover, I'm not looking at the ground as much, and maybe that's why the birds and the bird activity is sticking out in my mind. I've been thinking a lot about it the past month or so. What started off my little bird learning tangent was seeing pileated woodpeckers up close at the beginning of the month. I live in Two Harbors now, and I literally had pileated woodpeckers in my neighborhood that were flying through my yard and kind of hovered like right above my head and looked at me in the eyes. And I was like, whoa, that is crazy. So what are they doing? Why are we seeing these pileateds in the fall? That was kind of a question I had. So it seems that they're dispersing, finding new home ranges. The young ones are out of the nest cavity and possibly finding food for the fall. Another really neat opportunity I had recently was to see a very Well, it's rare to see this bird. It's rare to see this bird up close. It's a northern hawk owl. I may have mentioned my work with the Raptor Center before and how I still volunteer with them. And there was a northern hawk owl that was found in Two Harbors and brought down to the clinic where I met it and was holding it for its veterinary exam that day. And so this is telling me that here in November, there's already hawk owls moving down to the North Shore.
Was this individual one that was incapacitated somehow? It was not able to fly?
Correct.
Okay.
There have been sightings of healthy snowy owls down at Park Point and on some ore ships already. And then another interesting sighting was what I believe is our resident great gray owl that our operations supervisor spotted for the second time in the last 6 months down by our campground. But I believe with some of these sightings, all three of those owls are more of our tundra birds.
Right.
Great grays are known to be resident in northern Minnesota, but typically snowies and hawk owls don't reproduce in Minnesota. But during the winter, when their food is not available, either because it's frozen under the snow or some of the rodent populations are just low, which is what I'm hypothesizing right now, is because I don't think the tundra has an insurmountable amount of snow, and that's why the owls are coming down. I think it's their prey availability is low. Okay. And so these species might be hanging out in Minnesota this winter and creating a lot of cool sighting opportunities for folks. So I'm going to be keeping an eye out for these species at Gooseberry and Split Rock. A lot of these birds will be perching, and hunting from either dead fall trees. I know northern hawk owls like a little bit more open space in between their trees. So they might be up in some of our spruce forests that are turning over, but still have those mature snags.
Yeah. People
Same with
wonder
the pileateds,
about
you know.
Dead trees that have, broken the top half off of and those snags that remain. Yeah. I was going to mention that many of us who've lived here for a while have gone through the surprise of driving down a county highway and looking over at a animal like a horse pasture that has fencing, wood fence posts, and you suddenly see the tallest darn bird you ever expected to see in your life, and it's a great gray owl sitting on that fence post, and it just is breathtaking. It's like, that was a big animal.
It looks like a big animal, but it's mostly feathers.
I won't say that it has a lot of biomass, right? Yeah. But it has some volume. It really seems striking, like, that looks like a upper-tier predator, but I know it's really just a couple-pound bird, right?
Still an upper-tier predator, but yeah, absolutely correct. Yeah. They're fascinating. So, yeah, I've been thinking about some birds. With the lack of snow, once again, I'm not seeing a lot of paths, deer trails, you know, weasel footprints or anything like that that I kind of like to look for. I haven't seen any snowshoe hare prints or any hares at all.
Well, I started thinking about all the things that change when there's substantial snow cover, because we got about 3 to 4 inches in Clover Valley that has stuck, and we look like we're in a week where even if we get some sun, we're not going to get out of the 20s, so there's not going to be a lot of melting. It's kind of like a pre-base of snow, but it made me think and want to ask you to maybe comment a little bit on what's going to change for some of the mammals, and, you know, even what might change for how it affects the vegetation, or how the way the vegetation handles the snow affects the animals. I think a lot of people don't even think about things like the fact that when we used to have balsam fir healthy in the woods, those branches would hold snow and just not ever break. They would just lower themselves like 15 feet to the ground, and suddenly browsing could happen on branches that would have been 15 feet high otherwise without the snow.
Yeah, so I had found a very nice excerpt from the book Seasonal Guide to the Natural Year, a month-by-month guide to natural events by John Bates. And in a little chapter at the end of the book called A Closer Look into Snow Ecology, the author talks about these kind of specific relationships. One of them would be those trees that are really flexible. And in a time like that, with a lot of heavy snow, it's the browsers like deer and moose and snowshoe hare that really benefit from that extra food that they can reach. Another really common one, of course, is to think about how the snow cover affects deer. When it's low snowpack like this, of course, they have access to a lot of the vegetation still on the ground. Yep. Even though a lot of those plants aren't green, they will be eating some of that just for fiber. But
so you're talking about not what I'd call a true ground plant, like a forb, but short woody plants that are still sticking above the snow? Because my question is, how do those ungulates find the grass under the snow, or they just know to just put their nose in there and start rooting?
I think when there's snow on the ground, they're not going to be focused on what's underneath the snow. Musk oxen do that because they have a built-in shovel.
Yes, they've got the right
snoot shovel.
They've got the right tool, don't they? And the deer aren't really equipped with the great
equipment. So they're going to be picking off the green or the trees that they can see that poke up above the snow or that hang down, so really heavily browsing on trees during that time. But when there's no snow right now, they're still eating some of those perennial grasses, forbs, maybe with some of those leaves and stuff.
They're using their eyesight to see what.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
See what's available. Okay.
But then, of course, when we get, I don't know if this book actually had the exact amount that scientists think, that there's kind of a turnover where deer have to start spending much more energy to get through the snow.
Yeah, I thought it might have been somewhere in the 18-inch category.
Yeah, I think it has to get above their knees, up to their shoulder, is where the snow really becomes a detriment
to
them.
And I think there's also the special challenge of when you create a crust snow that you really deter their rapid movement through the woods.
Yeah, and that same with moose, too. The author says it acts effectively as an electric fence, essentially immobilizing these animals and keeping them to just walk on trails. And that's when we get those really significant beaten down game trails in the winter.
Right. And that is also when their preferred daily habit is to stay a lot in their yards, mm-hmm. right? They create yards and lowers their energy consumption because they're kind of sedentary.
Yeah, absolutely. Another fascinating thing is that when that snow has that thick crust on top, there is actually carbon dioxide buildup under the snow. And that's when like the lemming population can crash.
Yeah.
Or just around here, maybe the mice and the moles and the voles can't get to that air. So they have to act differently. They'll either create those columns or they could possibly just die under the snow.
Right. So CO2 doesn't just warm our atmosphere beyond a certain balance that we need, but it can build up under that crust, and a foot of snow can allow that to build up. And if I remember right, there's also decomposition taking place in the upper layer of the soil that's adding CO2 also.
Yeah, absolutely.
In addition to whoever's breathing under there.
Yeah, it adds enough heat where those little tiny critters like the invertebrates, maybe the woolly caterpillar will live in that warm area. Woolly caterpillars are the only caterpillar probably in North America that spends its winter in its caterpillar stage, and that's why they have the wool to help keep them warmer.
I think I read that you can get a steady 34 degrees under the snow, which doesn't sound tropical, but if well equipped with your fur, there you go.
That's warm enough, yeah. And then one other interesting tidbit was the snowshoe hare is the fastest animal on snow.
Yeah.
And if you're about 160 pounds... your foot would need to be 12 inches wide and 30 inches long to provide the same support that the snowshoe hare gets just from its
feet. Dare I say the name Bigfoot?
Mm-hmm.
That's where such a creature might be able to make it around better in our snowy forests. So you won't catch sight of them because they'd be moving. But we're just talking about a theoretical situation there. That's a big foot.
Very big foot. And when they don't have snow, they don't have the camouflage. They don't have the insulation. So these low snow pack years might actually hurt the snowshoe hare quite a bit. I'm interested to see if there's research on snowshoe hare populations and how that's going to look long term with this, especially with the climactic shifts.
Yeah. And certainly it doesn't stand them in good stead with predators finding them, right?
It's
just painfully obvious where they're moving mm-hmm. about the landscape. Those predators, there are a fair number of them, aren't there, if you're a snowshoe hare?
I would say bobcats. I think a red-tailed hawk or a rough-legged hawk could get a snowshoe hare. Probably a great horned owl.
Well, I know I've seen pine martens taking cottontails in my yard,
yes.
So they must be able to get snowshoes.
And probably pine marten fisher.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet if like even a mink or an ermine, sure. I mean, if they try to kill loons and white-tailed deer, they're probably going to go after a snowshoe hare if they have chance.
If they can even see it or catch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if coyotes are fast enough. I don't think that they would... I mean, of course, if it was an opportunity and it was cornered, it would take it. But in just terms of straight pursuit, I don't think a coyote or a wolf would be able to successfully catch.
Did you mention fox in there? I can't.
No, fox. I don't know if.
Because they're pretty nimble.
Yeah. I don't know if they're fast enough.
Right. I think they'd have to stage an ambush.
And they're not that really agile cat, right, that can just cut and move and fold backwards and jump from limb to limb in pursuit of a hare. So yeah.
A lot of speculation going on mm-hmm. today on Wandering Nature News, but that's okay because we are concerned because the snowshoe hare had a really rough year last year, and we don't want it. It's a pretty iconic critter for these parts.
Yeah, and it supports a lot of the other animals in our ecosystem. So it's something worthy to be worried about, I suppose.
Yeah, the first part of snowshoe hare is snow, and that was not visiting us very much last year. So we're off to maybe a different trend, but of course, I can't remember whether it snowed in November last year. We just remember that December, January, and February were pretty free of snow, and it was not a northern winter, really. But
it feels very similar to how last winter started off. in my memory, but who knows if my memory is actually accurate.
But we got close to 15 degrees at my house last night, which means it was maybe colder than it practically was all last winter. So there's that side of me that thinks, well, you have to have snow and cold to have a northern winter. So,
do you think the ground's frozen now?
Just the thinnest skin. Mm. Yeah, I've done out in my garden. Sunday, I was still able to dig in that soil when I was taking the last kohlrabi that was being stored in the ground for me. And never have I been able to store vegetables like that in the ground till late November. And this year I did because we had a lot of temperate conditions up through last week.
Yeah, and it's another deer season with snow. You know, not much snow on the ground.
Virtually none. I mean, maybe some parts around us. I know that there's a few spots in Minnesota that have over 6 inches of snow. We're not in them, in those areas. Well, that's what I have to question you about phenology-wise, Michaela. Any activities in the park coming up in the next month through the holiday season?
Yeah, I would like to tell everyone that the day after Thanksgiving, the 29th, is Free Park Day. Of course, Gooseberry Falls is typically a free park since you can park in the Wayside Rest and get into the park for free up there. But I do have 3 programs going on that day. So if you're around and need to entertain, I'll do the entertaining for you. You can bring your family to me. Starting at 11:30 to 1:30 in the theater of the Visitor Center, there'll be kind of like a craft open house. You come and go and use the supplies there. There'll be some different examples of things you could make. And of course, that's free. And then I will be doing a nature cart program in the Visitor Center from noon to 1:30 about the classic white-tailed deer and what they may use their tail to signal and how they communicate with each other. And then I will be having my first Chasing Waterfalls tour of the winter at 2:00, and I do what I call the falls loop, where we see upper, middle, and lower falls from both sides of the river. And that's about an hour walk. And you can come for just part of it if you'd like, just the accessible part on the pavement.
Wow. So you're talking about like 6 different views, 3 views from one side or the other of the falls, and you can make that circuit in just 1 hour. That makes it a pretty special place that you can get to that much water.
It's unique.
Falling water.
Yeah, and we even get a top view because we take the catwalk. Then we go, you know, below lower falls, over the footbridges. We may see beaver activity down there. I know the river otters are still, of course, out and about because they are warm and fit for these conditions. So
and this is all coming up on Friday, November 29th?
Correct.
Okay. You think we'll have some shelf ice forming? It's going to be a cold week. I don't think we're breaking the freezing mark.
I don't know. Last time I went out there, it was just rushing water. No sign of ice.
Because there's a little bit too much water, too, also. Maybe
yeah,
not.
With the rain, you know. But if we keep getting these cold nights, yeah, maybe we'll start to have some ice build up.
I'm just intrigued because it probably will follow the next week when you're not leading any groups out. But yeah, I know all of those ice fishermen are just obsessed with seeing that first ice sheet, even if the dangerous ice sheet that we don't want them to walk on. They get giddy.
Mm-hmm. I do want to plug one thing. My library programs at the Two Harbors Public Library have started back up again.
Uh-huh.
And you can find all of those programs on the Parks and Trails event calendar. The hint I'll give you is if you just type in library in, there's kind of a search bar, search for programs. If you search the word library, they will come up.
That's going to get you there.
Yeah, they're not attached to the Gooseberry Falls State Park. So if you were to try to search by park, you're not going to find these.
You have to be in the main search.
Yeah, and just look for a library. And I have 1, 2, 3 programs a month now until through April.
And they're all ages or some of them focused on the younger set?
Yeah, some of them are focused. They're youth programs. We will be doing a book group in April. So next month I'll tell you about that because I would like to give people a heads up to actually read the book. I have like another naturalist office hours in the spring that's, you know, maybe geared towards some older folks that have some questions, you know, maybe if they own a house or kids can come talk to me too about their favorite nature questions.
It's your naturalist office hours.
Yeah. And so then we have a wreath making program next month in December as well. So there's lots of stuff on the calendar.
I'd like to get the word out from you. If we're not meeting to do our segment for the radio before then, I'd like to make sure I could tell people when the wreath making is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Michelle's been helping me promote some programs, so I will get all that information to you guys. Yeah, very soon.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Michaela. I'm grateful for your presence on the radio. And so, you know, in that spirit of gratitude, have a happy Thanksgiving and we'll see you on the radio, I hope, soon.
Yeah, I would. I'm looking forward to being back. It's been a while since I've seen your face, Leo. So I hope everyone's doing well.
I was out of commission there. Thank you for your patience. Mm-hmm. And glad that we're back on the Wandering Nature News Trail. Thanks a lot, Michaela. Take care.
Goodbye, everyone.
That was Michaela Rice, naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park, and this is Leo for KTWH.